Accession number 11440 real 4.
Mr. Walter Hare, Real 4. We were talking about your time in the trenches in the Heberturn area between December sort of 1916 to roughly March 1917. You've told me how wet the trenches were and how it was sometimes cold. What effects did that have on you?
Well, it just made you miserable because you couldn't get warmed, you see, and you couldn't get any warm food. At least it was supposed to be warm. It was cold before you got it, you see. And you see, you're fighting a losing battle all the time, trying to get rid of the mud, but it just came into the trenches again, you see. You all the time, using your entrenching tool to try and keep a place reasonably dry for you to stand on.
What you mean by draining an area, you mean?
We threw the mud over the top, you see, but unfortunately it came back again very soon. But
what about effects? I mean, when you did have to stand in water, were there problems with things like trench feet?
Yes, but fortunately, I remember there were. There were chaps that kept getting trench feet and be going out, going sick, you see, and had to go back for a while. But I was fortunate. I never got trench feet. I tried to look after myself and I tried to scrape the mud off if I could and keep myself as clean as possible.
That helped?
That helped,
keeping
yes.
Your feet clean?
I thought, yes, it did, yes. And
did you use whale oil? Or was it issued for you to use?
I never had any. I never saw any issued. There were, I think, some places where, but I never saw any.
What about the cold? I mean, were there any cases of frostbite?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were quite a few frostbite. I was lucky there again. I never got any. I suffered from the cold, of course. But I suppose, being young and always lived in the country, I was fairly healthy to start with, you see. It didn't affect me, but some of the older men, some were a bit older men, and some of the younger men as well, it affected them.
How did you try and keep warm? I mean, what could you do to try?
Well, you could sort of, you know, wave your arms about and sort of that kind of thing. You couldn't run up and down, that's a fact. You could only stand about, you see. There wasn't much you could do, honestly, but they realised that the conditions were so difficult, we never did more than seven days in the trenches there. And then we came out for 7 days, you see, and we'd rest outside. So the first day you got the mud scraped off, the second day you got it cleaned up, and by the third day, but by the end of the week, you got yourself clean, you were ready going back in the mud again.
What about your health generally? Did you have any problems with dysentery, constipation, any of the or trench fever, any of those things?
No, I didn't. I had dysentery in Germany, but not as a prisoner, but not as while I was in the army.
Did you have any real complaints with your health at all while you were at Heberton, really?
No, I don't think I did at Heberton.
Did you get colds, ordinary colds?
Or we got ordinary colds, yes. But you shook them off, you accepted it. There was nothing you could do. Not a lot of it. I think you got gradually used to the conditions, and it was part of your life, so you accepted it.
So when you got a cold, would you go to the MO?
Well, some of them did. I never did. I never got anything for a cold.
I'd like to look at a sort of typical day. It may touch on some things we've already. Starting perhaps with stand to in the morning. What you mentioned stand to, what was stand to in your battalion?
As day was breaking, you all had to man the trench, you see, and look out to see that the Germans weren't going to make an attack. Usually for about an hour, you see, you stood on your fire step and you kept a lookout. Then you stood down, then you had your breakfast.
When you were at stand two, would you all look over the top or just the designated sentries?
Well, most of you. practically all of you. Yes, it was a standard was for everybody actually.
And you'd all look over the top.
You'd all look over the top, yes.
Wasn't there a risk of snipers when you did that, or?
Well, you had to be careful about that. You see, you had a parapet of sandbags in front of you. See, and just occasionally you looked over. You didn't watch all the time. You just looked over the top from time to time to see that nothing was happening. You see. But the point was this, the Germans were having stand to at the same time as us, you see. So they were afraid that we might shoot at them too. So usually it was, at stand to was usually a quiet period, both morning and night.
What about, you said after stand to you had breakfast. What that would be what, usually?
Well, you got your loaf of, there would be a corporal perhaps would bring the bread round to you, give you a loaf of bread, a bun between four of you. And then you he'd give you your, if you wanted, if there was jam or anything like that, you see, or cheese, whatever it happened to be. You went and got your share out of that. And your tea, if there was any tea.
Now, what would your duties be during the day? You were an ordinary private at that time.
I was a private, yes.
Would you be on sentry duty with the rest then?
From time to time, yes.
How was the sentry duty organised?
Oh, well, you would have a sergeant, perhaps, in charge of a platoon, you see. And you'd do maybe 2 hours on sentry go, just looking out from time to time, you see, being on the alert. And then you'd be somebody else would come on.
Did you use a periscope ever when you were on sentry?
I never did. But we did have one or two, I think.
What could you see over no man's land during the day?
Mud. And wire.
Could you see where the could you see the German line?
You could see the German line. Oh, yes. In some places, it was... in Edmonton, it was fairly near.
About how far?
Oh, I think 100 yards, perhaps. Some places, it was even nearer than that. And then other places... if you look at that... You see, you'll see where it isn't. It's some places it's further away than others.
Now, so you, when you weren't on sentry duty, what would you do?
Well,
during the day, this is.
I don't think we could do any. Well, some played cards.
Did you play cards?
I didn't play cards. No, it was not in my line. And some had a crown and anchor board, and they played crown and anchor, you know. And they were real gamblers. They were always gambling about something, you see. And
did you not approve, or did you not want to?
I didn't want to. It didn't interest me, no.
What about, how would you amuse yourselves during the day? I mean...
Well, you couldn't amuse yourself. There was nothing to amuse yourself with.
Would you talk with your...
Oh, yes. Yes, and you got friendly with people, and you talked about your home life and things like that, you see, about what you did at school and that sort of thing, and your home, you know, what your home was like and what you'd done before. We talked about various things, you see.
Did you talk about the war much?
No.
Why was that?
But we were part of it. It didn't interest us.
During the day, at Heberton, was there much shell fire during the day?
No, not a lot. Just a case. There was more into the village itself, but our trench was in front of the village. They used to shell the village quite a bit, you see. Well, what was left of it was all rubbish there, you see. And they used to shell the road behind the village from Salierbo, more than the shell does, actually. Well, they did shell us occasionally, but not a lot.
What did you think? I mean, you've not been in the line long. What did you think of your first experience of shell fire? How did it strike you?
Well, I don't think it struck me at all. I just thought it was part of the life you were going to live, you see.
But you didn't come under a heavy bombardment
at
that stage?
No, not at that stage, no.
Was there any mortar fire or gas shell bombardment?
No, not there. Not at Heberton, there wasn't. No, I don't think there was any trench mortar fire there at all.
And gas shells?
No, not at Heberton, no.
What about sniping? Was that a problem at Heberton?
There was one or two, yes. You had to be in certain places where that sniping, and you had to be careful as you went. If you were moving along the trench, you see, where it was a bit low down.
Where the trench was lower?
Well, lower, yes.
And were these places signposted, or did you just have to
know? No, you got to know, yes, yes. Mm.
What about general small arms fire? I mean, you mentioned you spent more of your time firing at rats. Was there much firing done generally?
Not a lot at Ebbington, no.
During the day, did you, later on you became a runner. Were you a runner while you were at Heverton?
No.
So just a private?
Yes, I was just a private, yes.
Who was more in charge, if you see what I mean? Your NCOs or your officers during this stage? Who did you see most of?
NCOs. We very rarely saw an officer, except when he came round to inspect us and then he went back to his dugout.
Do you remember your NCO's name?
No, I don't. No.
Do you remember what type of, whether he was a good NCO?
Yes, with a good sergeant and a good corporal in charge of our platoon, yes.
What about the officer that came?
Wilson, they called our officer.
Wilson?
Wilson, yes. We thought he was a bit of a dope.
Why was that? What made you think
that? Well, he always wanted to go inspect the German wire, and he always wanted one of us to go with him, you see, and that thing, he wanted. He was a fearless sort of a chap, you know, and for no apparent reason, you know, in daylight he'd say, look, let's go and have a look at the German wire, and he wanted to call out, you know, in front of our wire to see, and we didn't want to do that, you see, but however.
Did you have to do that with him?
Yes, I'd been out with him, yes, inspecting the German wire.
In daylight?
In daylight, yes.
Can you remember what happened?
They used to shoot at us, you see, and we had to get down and that sort of thing. Many times we called out along in the mud to have a look at the wire. We're stupid, we thought, because we could see it from where we were without calling out to look at it.
What was he looking for?
Well, I don't know. He was always talking about the Bosch, you know. You had to keep your eye on the Bosch.
So he was brave, but there didn't seem to have been much point in his bravery.
No, there didn't, no.
You seem to have him more as doing these things that weren't too necessary, but it was your sergeant who actually controlled
who
ran the day-to-day things.
Yes, they did. Yes, he landed, yes.
And where the officer was billeted back in the dugout off the communication trench?
Yes, they would be back there, yes. Sir.
Were the other officers at that time like him? I mean, were
they similar? No, they were all. He was sort of an outstanding man, we thought. He seemed to do some funny things, you see.
Do you remember the other funny things?
No.
But he had that reputation?
He had that reputation, yes.
What about more senior officers?
Well, we never saw them. We saw the colonel when we was out strapping us for something we'd done in the trenches, which he shouldn't have done, you see. But about the only time when we went out on rescue, he always had to crib about something that we'd done.
Did you respect your officers at the time?
We did, yes. Oh, yes.
During the day, would you be set any sort of tasks, like repairing a bit of trench that was...
Well, regularly we were preparing all the time. While we were at Ebbington, in the bad time, we were keeping the trench as good order as we possibly could, you see, revetting it with any rubbish or any wood that we get out of the village, anything like that, you see. Make it as comfortable as we could for ourselves.
So that was something that would be going on most days?
Most of the day, yes.
Would you be supervised in that, or was it left
to
you?
No, it was left to you. Yes.
So it was for your own good?
It was your own good. You were in your part of your trench. You tried to keep that as good as you possibly could.
Now, what about at night? The sentries would obviously carry on at night as well. Was it more difficult and nerve-wracking being a sentry at night?
Well, it was, because you had to keep, you know, sort of looking over to see that there were very lights going up a lot of the time, you see. And that was one thing you had to be careful about. If you were out on a patrol of any sort, and very lights went up, you had to either stand perfectly still or flop down into the mud straight away, you see. You must not move when the lights were, because they would spot you see. And if you stood perfectly still, they very often perhaps didn't recognise that it was a human being. You didn't recognise yourself you were a human being sometimes.
Now, there are various different types of patrols. You've told us about the listening patrol.
Yes, yes, yes.
Did you go out on any other listening patrols?
No, that was... I went on them other times, yes. But I always remember the first one particularly because of my first night in the trenches.
What about... reconnaissance patrols anyway? Did they do much of them?
Yes, certain parties went out, you see, but usually it was at dusk to check up. We went out from time to time to check a party. It was to check the German way to see that they weren't... check hours sometimes to see hours was all right, and if it wasn't, then at night you had to go out and repair it, you see.
A wiring party.
Wiring party, yes.
What was a wiring party like? Could you tell me how you went about that?
Well, you were... I think you had a pair of sort of pliers or something like that, and we took a coil of... If there was a place where it was as bad, we took a coil of wire out and sort of fixed it onto the space that was open.
Would you hammer in the stakes, or would you...
No, we did at first, but then we got screws, because they were making so much noise hammering them in, you see. And we got sort of screw pickets, and you screwed them round, and you could get them down. And we had those on Vimy Ridge as well, you see, the screw ones, because it was hard stuff there.
Would there be a covering party out?
Oh, yes. You always had, when you were doing a wiring party, you always had the covering party with
you. Did
you
ever do the covering party?
Yes, I've been on both, and I've been on wiring parties as well.
What would you do? What would the covering party be doing?
Well, you were working on a certain part of the trench, of the wire, and the covering party would be at either side of you, sort of protecting you and watching to see that the Germans didn't interfere, you know, attack you while you were wiring. Because they did from time to time. They heard the wiring party, they'd launch an attack on you, you see.
So where would you take position? Would you actually lie down, each of
you? Or lie down.
Pick your own position.
Or lie down, definitely lie down, yes.
Would you go on fight? Did you ever go on a fighting patrol where you were actually looking, doing what the Germans did, looking for trouble?
No,
so
no.
You never went
there. I never was on a fighting patrol.
And no raids then at Heberton?
No, no.
When you were on a covering patrol there, what weapons would you take with you?
Your rifle, that was all.
And would you bother with things like blackening your face or anything
no,
like that?
No, no. They were black enough with the mud.
Was there anything else you'd had to do at night? You've mentioned ration parties. Anything, other jobs you'd have to do in the evening?
No,
night?
I don't think there was. It was... You had what they call a rest period. You look if you could rest, of course, but there wasn't a lot of...
When did you do most of your sleep? Would it be during the night, during the day, that you got most of your rest when you were in...
Well,
the
during the day, yes. You learnt to sleep standing up. You wouldn't think you could, but you could.
Did you have any trouble staying awake on sentry while you were...
No, I was no problem there.
So that was... What it was like when you were in the line.
In the line, yes.
When you were back out at the farm that you mentioned, the farm building.
Yes.
What was it? You said that you spend a lot of time cleaning up.
Yes.
But they didn't go as far as full spit and polish and expect...
Oh, no, you never... Well, no, because you know bright buttons and like that, you see. But they were particularly about your boots, getting your boots clean. And I used to wash them in this little stream if I could, you see, get the mud off that way and then rub them down with a bit of cloth or something like that and get all of them in grass or something like that. But I was always particular about keeping my boots in good condition because some of the chaps got trench feet, and I think it was because they didn't look after the feet, you see. And I washed my feet as soon as I came out, and I washed my socks and my shirt and things like that. Always when I had the spare shirt, I always washed my things when I was out, if I could, and kept them as clean as I possibly could, after I'd got rid of all the lice, of course.
Would you have any official duties, besides cleaning yourself? Would they give you duties while you were out at the...
Oh, we always had guard duties.
What were the guard duties like there?
Well, I remember the first guard duty. Well, it was out. We came out on guard. We were billeted in a barn, and we did a guard on the barn. And the quartermaster stores were there, and the sergeant in charge of us, he were guarding the quartermaster stores. He says, "We'll have a brew during the night." So he went to the quartermaster stores, the other part of the barn, and got some tea and biscuits and things, you see, and sent us some water and made a brew up after the stuff we were guarding.
When you set a guard like that, would they bother with things like they had in England about stick drill and things like that?
Oh, no.
Man
and, oh, no.
And an inspector.
No. They inspected the guard, yes. But you walked up and down. It just depends what you were guarding, you see.
What else would you have to do while you were out?
Well, you did the drills. You did usually route marches or something like that, you see. And a bit of formation drill. But as far as I remember, we didn't do any actual training that was any use to us when they got into the line, you see.
So this is a continuation of your complaint, in a sense, from England. You still weren't doing training that was relevant to...
Well, looking back on it, I don't think we were, no.
And you were still aware of that at the time,
though? Yes, oh yes, yes.
What amusements did you have while you were at places like Rossignol Farm? You know, what would you do when you were off duty?
Nothing. There was nothing you could do. There was nowhere to go.
No estaminets or...
No village anywhere near. No. It was completely isolated, this farm. Nearest village was Bencord, about 2 miles west. I think there was nothing there. There was a shop in the village. It was still occupied with people living in Bencourt, in some of the houses. Some of them had left and they were unoccupied. And we used those as billets.
How did you get on with the French that were there?
Not very good.
Why not? What was the problem?
Well, one problem, we'd been in the line, we'd done an extra tour. I think for some reason we'd done about 10 days and it was really pretty bad. And we came out... And we'd been short of practically everything, food and everything. We'd had a very bad spell. And the village we were going to was about 4 miles away. We were doing the march. And they told us when we got there, the cookers had gone on, there'd be some hot tea waiting for us when we got there, a drink, you see. And when we got to the village, the cooks said they couldn't make us any tea because the villagers had taken all the... buckets off the wells, and there was no water available. And we'd done about 10 days in the line, and then did a 4 mile walk, and then we couldn't get even a cup of tea. And we were disgusted about it. We said, well, these are the people we're fighting for.
So that was the main complaint?
That was the main complaint.
Why do you think the French felt like that about you, if you see what I mean? Why had they done that?
Well, because they had only wells. They had no tap water. They relied on the wells and didn't want us to be using... And I think maybe they were a bit of short, you see, and they didn't want us to be using their water. But actually what happened, some of our Stokes bombers came and commandeered one well and they said that was theirs. And they told the village, it was right at the top end of the village, and they told the villagers if they interfered with it, they'd drop a bomb down every well and put them all out of betting. So we had that well at the top. And when we wanted water for anything, we had to go to this one well, and they put a guard on it, did these Stokes bombers.
Now, that was a... Did they show their...
animosity.
Yes, in any other way.
No, just ignored us at that point. I think that, you know, it was pretty bad for them on the Somme. They were fairly near to where the action was taking place, and I think they weren't normal.
Was there much shell fire, long range shell fire on the air? Because it is, as you say, within the
yes.
battle zone.
No, not a lot. As a matter of fact, at Sailly Abord, there was a farmer who was still ploughing his fields there. And from time to time, they did lob shells over, but he kept on. He was working his farm. As a matter of fact, he used to have, when he was ploughing or what he was doing, he had some white horses and some brownish ones, you see. And sometimes he had a white horses on the left and a brown one. Sometimes they were all white, sometimes all coloured. And we thought he was giving a signal to the Germans, because sometimes they shelled us pretty badly, and we thought he was letting them know that we were going in, you see. I don't think it was true, but we thought that, you see.
What about while you're outside? Did you get parcels and letters from the UK?
Oh yes, yes. My girlfriend sent me parcels, and my mother always And always letters, there were always a letter waiting for when I came out. My father never bothered writing, but mother always did.
Were the letters very important to you?
Most important, yes.
What sort of things would they write about?
About what was going on at home, you see.
And what would you write about back?
Well, you couldn't tell much. You couldn't tell them where you were, what you were doing, and like that, you see, because they were always censored. And anything that was, you knew that if you put anything in that you shouldn't have done, it would have been, the letter would perhaps have been never sent at all, you see. But about once a month, you got a green envelope. And that wasn't censored. But you were under your obligation to not put anything in it. That occasionally one would be opened and might be censored. So you hadn't to put anything in it that you shouldn't do. But I always save me green envelope for my young lady.
So you'd write more romantic?
About romantic things, yes.
Rather than about the rest of the world. What about what would be in the parcels that you got?
Oh, well, you see, Mother would send me some cake of some sort. And, perhaps a piece of bacon, a chunk of bacon she had cooked, you see, something like that, or some meat of some kind. And my girlfriend, we didn't call them girlfriends, we called them sweethearts in them days. She used to send usually a parcel of fruit, because her father was a farmer, and a fruit farmer as well. He had some big orchard, and usually it was fruit, and I really enjoyed that.
Would the parcels arrive in good condition?
Yes.
Untampered with?
Mine were. Yes, and no problem there.
Would you share them amongst your friends?
Oh, yes, if you got a parcel, because some of them never got anything, you see. And
did you have any special friends in the 16th that you can remember now,
I had one lad I was very friendly with, a lad called Smith. He came from Bradford, and he was a family that were all musical family, piano players, that kind of thing, you see. I wasn't particularly friendly, but he was one of my pals, you see. We helped each other.
Were there any characters you remember from those days, from the battalion, other than the officer you mentioned?
There were one or two. There was an Irish chap, a sergeant, he was a bit of a case.
In what way?
Well, he loud voiced and knew all the swear words, and he used to use them.
Well, you come from quite a quiet background.
Yes.
A quiet boy, not drinking, not smoking. Yep. No. Did you find sometimes that some of the rougher, shall we say, elements in the army, and the swearing, drinking, that sort of thing, did it upset you at all?
No, it didn't bother me, except it is part of the life they were living. It wasn't mine, but it was theirs.
They didn't try and press their view on you?
No, oh no.
Did you try and press your view on them?
No, you found somebody of your own like this Smithy lad was a nice lad, and he was a quiet sort of a person. I think that's why we piled on.
So it was a live and let live?
Live and let live, yes.
Right. The next real thing is that's what happened. You were in the line and out of line.
Yes.
We've discussed that. What about the major events? Did you go over the
top? We went over the top of Debbie.
Could you tell me exactly what happened, starting with when you first heard about it and the briefing for the attack?
Well, we were told that we were going to make an attack the next morning. We were told, I think it was something past 7 or something like that. We were told, you know, it would be 2 minutes past 7 or something like that, you see. And Mr. Wilson was in charge of our platoon. This Mr. Wilson I've told you about. But we were never told what our objective was. In fact, any attack that I was in, I was never told. I didn't know then our objective was Sir, evidently. But we didn't know. We were just told that we were going to attack. And get as far as we could. Now, it was about February, and the Germans were moving back to the Hindenburg line. But we didn't know that. We weren't told that. The officers would know. And perhaps some of the NCs would know, NCOs would know, but we weren't told. And I think that was where they slipped up, you see. We were just the common or garden soldiers that went forward and did the job. And I think if they told us what our objective was and what we were aiming at, we'd have been more prepared for it, you see. But we didn't know. We attacked, you see. Well,